Welcome to Everyone Loves Guitar, where we get to sit down and talk with interesting professional guitar players and related music industry experts. If you love playing guitar, stick around. You're in the right place. Hey, everybody. This is Craig Garber from Everyone Loves Guitar, and we're having all sorts of chaos here. I'm here with, like, really one of the – I don't know today's guest really well, but we've spoken, and he's just a very sweet, genuine human being, and he's a monster guitar player, and I'm really honored to have him on the show. We're here with the one and only, freshly shaved, freshly showered – well, freshly showered anyway – Johnny Hyland. How are you, man?
Buddy, I am doing great, Greg. Thank you so much for having me on here, pal.
You're welcome. I'm so happy you came on, man. Let me give you some background on Johnny, as if you don't know him already. Johnny grew up in a small town of Baileyville, Maine. He was born legally blind with an eye disease known as nystagmus. Did I get that right?
That's it.
Nystagmus, which didn't allow him to grow up like most kids. He couldn't do things sighted children could do, like playing baseball, kickball, and so on. Ha! When it came to guitar, right? So instead, he started playing guitar at age 2, and he loved it. He played for family and friends. He won local talent contests, and he went on to perform his first TV show at age 7. His career took off when he won the Talent America contest at age 10 in New York City. At the time, he had a band with his sister Jody and his brother Jerry called the 3Js, and they performed all over New England as part of the Down East Country Music Association. They had loads of fun playing for people, and Johnny grew as an artist playing guitar, banjo, fiddle, mandolin, and other instruments. His dad took him to see Ricky Skaggs perform in Bangor, Maine, and Johnny immediately went from picking bluegrass to wanting a Telecaster. As a teen, Johnny spent countless hours learning and developing his own blend of chicken picking, rock, blues, and swing while picking in a number of different bands around the state of Maine. After finishing high school and 3 years of college, he moved to Nashville in 1996. It's always amazing, man. Look, that one event. Had you not gone to that Ricky Skaggs concert...
That's it, buddy. That's what changed my life, man, a lot.
You know, I always look, and you can't connect the dots moving forward. And I always look back, and I'm always amazed that different things with myself or other people, like, boom, there. You know, Johnny Hyland may be like a mechanical engineer, an accountant, had you not gone, well, I doubt that, but, you know, you would have been something with guitar, but maybe not where you are now, had you not gone to that concert.
That's right, man. And I've actually told Ricky that in person, man. It was... You know, to get to meet him, you know, who obviously is my biggest musical hero, you know, and to play on a record with him that won a Grammy back in 04, man. I mean, it was a dream come true for me. So
that's awesome.
Yes, I told Rick exactly what he means to me. And Lord, he's so humble, buddy. I don't know how much he believed it, but, you know, what an awesome experience.
That's wonderful, man. I'm really glad you got to do that, man. Since then, he's performed countless shows and honky-tonks all over Lower Broadway, and he started at the world-famous Turf. After a few years, he landed the gig with the Don Kelly Band at Robert's Western World, which led him to performing on TNN's Primetime Country, and then as an artist at the legendary Grand Ole Opry. Johnny's played on a number of records for artists like Toby Keith, Trick Pony, Randy Travis, Ricky Skaggs, Janie Frick, Lynn Anderson, Rodney Dillard, Rebecca Lynn Howard, Noki Edwards, and Hank III. In 2004, Johnny signed his first record deal as a guitar artist with Steve Vai and his guitar-based record company, Favored Nations. They released Johnny's first debut self-titled album later that same year. Since then, he's been touring the globe with his band, the Johnny Hyland Band. He was blessed with a number of great endorses and ended up with his own guitar model with PRS Guitars. In 2007, he released a second guitar album independently. It was called Loud and Proud. Throughout his career, Johnny's toured with his own band, yet he's also performed on stage with artists like Sammy Hagar, Ted Nugent, George Clinton and P-Funk, Les Paul, Steve Vai, Joe Bonamassa, G3, Ricky Skaggs, again, Hank III, and many others. He loves to teach and has his own line of guitar instructional material as well. He's got 2 Hot Licks videos, a number of books and CDs with Mel Bay, 2 True Fire courses, and a 20 Licks course with Jam Track Central in the UK. That's a really good company. They have a pretty extensive catalog there.
Yes, they do.
After facing the loss of both parents from 2005 to 2008, Johnny spent time with his longtime friend Ronnie Lutrick working on a blues project called The Blues Connection. I didn't ask you this in the questions, but I'm just reading it out here. I would imagine that was therapeutic for you.
Oh, very much so, man. Ronnie Lutrick and I go back to the Don Kelly days at Robert, so we've been friends for about 17 years, man, and truly a family member to me, man. He's a great guy and a monster singer and bass player as well, and of course he's got a new record out on his own now as well, so real proud of him, and he's a great guy.
Awesome. He went on, and in 2010 he teamed up with Ernie Ball Music Man Guitars for more of the country spank he needed for his tone. excited with this new move. He went on tour with the Grand Ole Opry star Hal Ketcham, and the Johnny Highland Band opened for Hal and played his show as well. That all ended, and Johnny went on to get signed. Sorry about that. To get signed with Mike Varney and Shrapnel Records near the end of the year. Johnny landed in the studio with Mike in early 2011, and they released All Fired Up in July of that year. Now, I'm older than you, probably maybe quite a bit even, but I don't know if you know this. You probably do. When I was a kid, Shrapnel came out. They were like hardcore heavy metal.
Yes.
Yeah. And, you know, like a lot of the kind of the cutting edge metal bands from Europe would get signed to them.
Yes. I'll be honest, man. Mike Varney was a sincere pleasure to work with, man. He was laughing, man, because he's like, I've never done anything, you know, in a chicken picking vein. You know, totally shred metal, you know, but we had a great time together, man. So I think really outside of Michael Lee Firkins, I was the only chicken picker he ever worked with.
That's right. I haven't heard that name in a long time. Michael Lee Firkins. That's an old name.
Great guy, man.
Good player.
Yes, he is.
Johnny's involved with the Inspire America Foundation, which works with underprivileged children, homeless veterans, and human trafficking. It's important to Johnny to inspire young people to play music and to keep guitar alive. Johnny started working with Renegade Radio to release his own radio show called Guitar Mania with Johnny Highland. This show features Johnny teaming up with his manager, John Herring, to keep guitar music alive for future generations. And we'll talk about this show later on in the call. 2018 is going to bring some exciting ventures into Johnny's life. He's going to be performing on the second annual Steel Guitar Cruise in February, and he plans to tour extensively with the Johnny Highland Band on a truck stop tour. Throughout 2018, he plans on releasing his book, seeing new instructional material released with True Fire, and he's going to be releasing new merchandising. So get out your credit cards and send this man money. That's all I could tell you. He's a happy man these days. In teaching, recording, touring, and spending as much time as possible with his beautiful wife, Kim, and their two dogs, Buddy and Ella. He feels and he shows every single day that he's been very blessed by God for the gift of music and guitar and to be able to continue to earn a living doing what he loves to do. You know, that's another thing I didn't say about you, that your passion, I don't know you, but I've seen you, you know, in interviews and, you know, your passion for just playing music is very apparent. You know, it's still like you could tell that guitar is near and dear to your heart.
Oh, it really is, man. It truly is. I've been so blessed, man, to have a long career, man, and I'm still going strong, man. And it's, you know, it's had its ups and downs, brother, but I'm real proud to be, you know, in the music industry and just have a veritable army of wonderful people to work with, man. So, I'm definitely very blessed, for sure.
Awesome. And just to let you know, every entrepreneurial venture, you're always going to have ups and downs, man. I can tell you right now.
Oh. Of course, well, that's just life in general, I guess, correct?
Oh, totally. P.S., yeah. He has a number of... Okay, Johnny's got a number of great signature products on the market through his many endorsements, and you can find a full list of gear on Johnny's website, which is johnnyhyland.com, H-I-L-A-N-D.
.net, my friend.
Oh, I'm sorry, johnnyhyland.net, H-I-L-A-N-D.net. Gibson Guitars has stated Johnny to be one of the top five chicken pickers. Guitar World's listed Johnny as being one of the 50 fastest guitarists of all time. He was also listed in one of the top three country players in a Vintage Guitar Magazine readers poll. He loves his fans very much and sincerely appreciates all the support given by them, his endorsers, his band, friends, and family. For tour dates and all the other information on Johnny, as I said, please stay tuned for updates on his site at johnnyhyland.net. Again, that's H-I-L-A-N-D. Ricky Skaggs once said of Johnny, I think Johnny Highland's the most versatile guitar player I've ever heard. From Bill Monroe to Eddie Van Halen, he could play it all. Ted Nugent said of Johnny, I've jammed with the best the world has produced. Johnny stands spirit to spirit with them all. That said, thank you, man. Thanks for coming on the show.
It's such a pleasure, man. It really is.
So, you know, first of all, you're a person that I admire just as a human being because you started off life with a hardship because of your vision, but you're not, you know, clearly you're the kind of guy that, you know, doesn't let outside things make you miserable and you don't let outside things prevent you from having fun or from living a rich and full life. My question is, what do you think motivated you to persevere at this? And in order to do what you've done, you've had to look at the glass half full instead of half empty. So what was your motivation behind that?
You know, man, I think as a kid growing up, I had two of the best parents on the planet, man, and very overprotective, but yet wanted to see us kids, you know, live out our dreams, man. And my dad was really the guy who taught me, you know, son, if you're going to do something, you know, don't do it halfway, do it all the way or don't even bother, you know. And so when I, you know, it was like playing 22 instruments that I've played throughout my lifetime, man. I, you know, I really devoted myself to, you know, playing guitar, of course. You know, it's like Dad said, if you're going to do it to the best of your ability or don't even bother, man. So I've continued, even at 42 years old, I'm still trying to get better on the instrument, man. But, you know, I think with having overprotective parents, you know, their goal for my life was to go to college, become a teacher, and to teach during the school year and play in bands during the summertime. Well, that seemed okay for me when college came around, you know, after high school and whatnot. But in having the struggles of the vision problem in college, you know, getting books on cassette through National Federation for the Blind and struggling to see what professors wrote on the chalkboards and stuff, because obviously in a college classroom, you're sitting in like a theater style seating and, you know, it's not like high school where you're sitting right up close, you know. Mm. And so I struggled a lot in college, and finally I actually devoted my time in college to being a history major with adept studies in the Civil War. And I was writing a term paper one night, and I was living with my grandmother, my Nana Dot, and while I was going to USM in Portland, Maine, and I saw the reflection of my guitar cases under the bed in my bedroom. And I just thought to myself, what am I doing? What am I putting myself through just to please my parents and not really live out my life the way they want me to? I want to live for what I want to do. And so I hit the delete button, buddy, and went to college the next day and formally withdrew. And I'll be honest with you, man, from that point, you know, God has worked and blessed me all through my life. But at that point, it was the turning point to where I inevitably made that decision on my own to go to Nashville. So a dear friend of my sister's saw me formally withdrawing in college and sitting in the financial aid office and all that stuff and handling all the paperwork. And she called my sister, who was going to the university in New England to become a physical therapist at the time. And of course, she called mom and dad, John's leaving school. Oh my gosh, you know. And so they send my outreach worker from the state, Chuck McGinty, down to Portland to see me. He knocked on the door at my grandmother's house. And by the time he was done talking to me, which he was obviously sent by my parents to keep me in school.
Sure.
By the time we were done with that meeting, man, he bought my plane ticket to Nashville. So, you know, but that from that point on, man, I knew it was going to be a blessed situation. And I had, you know, full support from the good Lord above, because I knew from that blessing on, it was like, man, this is it. This is what I have to pursue. You know, the time is now. So, but then when I moved to Nashville, man, I struggled with the eyesight. You know, I fell down everywhere here in town, man, until I learned my way around. But I have such a burning love and passion for country guitar and country music in general. I mean, from all the way back when I was 7 years old, my ultimate dream was to play the Grand Ole Opry.
Wow.
And, of course, people in Maine go, oh, that's cute. You know, he's But really, that was so burned in me that my desire was to, you know, just get out of what my parents wanted me to do and make that leap in life, man, and say, hey, I'm gonna try this to the best of my ability. And so, even from the first day I hit Nashville, buddy, it was on for me. I was like, man, I got to get this done. So I was, you know, hitting the honky tonks real hard and getting, you know, cards thrown out to people and trying to get my name around town. And, you know, in 98, the big tornado hit, and I moved over with Don Kelly, and then, of course, got seen by Gary Chapman, got put on Primetime Country, and then ended up with my first Opry debut at 24 years old. So, you know, and then the rest is history, my friend, exactly what you read off my my bio, man. It's been a long uphill climb, but I've enjoyed every aspect of it. And the things that were the downfalls were certainly things I learned from. And I think they've certainly made me a stronger artist today. So I've been real blessed, man, and certainly proud to be here for sure.
Wow. That was, I got goosebumps when you told me that story, man, and what's really cool is that, so basically going through this, seeing the reflection of the guitar cases, that like took you off of autopilot and put you into direct control. Something about that triggered it.
Oh, buddy, it was manual control after that. There was no auto. But I admit, man, it really, really angered my parents. And, you know, at 42 years old now, I can understand why they were so angry. And it, you know, I think as parents, they did the right thing in saying, look, here's a great direction for you. And here's something that I think they may have wanted me to stick around Maine, which, man, I have nothing against the state of Maine. I'm so proud to be from there. And I encourage anyone listening to go, you know, have a vacation in Maine. It's beautiful. If you like fishing and hunting and that kind of thing, man, I mean, Maine is just beautiful. And good seafood, too, I must say. I really, really love the state of Maine, man, but I knew that Nashville had been in my sights since 7 years old, and I just had to follow that dream, man, for sure.
I really give you credit because that took a lot of courage to do that and especially because you probably had in the back of your mind, because your parents were so overprotective, you probably had a sense of, man, you know, I have this vision issue and they've really gone out of their way to make my life as fulfilling as possible. And I feel like I owe them. I don't want to, not owe them, but I don't want to disappoint them.
Right.
And yet you had the courage to say, you know, this is going to work. I know. And it's what's really cool is how the universe just supported that from the time your caseworker came down. And that guy's buying you a ticket, man. I mean, how much more support?
Well, that was really the I needed. It was like, all right, cool. This is finally going to happen.
Yeah, yeah. That's a wonderful story.
Blessing, at the same time, my parents were so mad that literally my dad was like, you're not getting no money from me. I'm going to take you to the airport and drop you off, which was a two-hour ride from my house, you know.
Yeah, I looked on the map. You're like on the butt up against the Canada, like literally, right on the Canadian border. I was like, holy crap.
Well, and it's, you know, like I said, I love my hometown. People knew me in the hometown from playing guitar and being in the paper a lot and all that kind of stuff. And I still really, really appreciate the support I get from back home, man. I mean, even with the radio show, people are tuning in. And it's, you know, it's such a blessing to have that kind of support. However, from my parents' standpoint, it was like, look, you made this decision against us. You're on your own, Slick. And so I literally moved to Nashville with $98 in my pocket, man. I had nothing, man. And I thought, what am I going to do? I mean, you know, I've made this decision and now I have to follow through with it. But, you know, I'm on the plane thinking, oh my God, what have I done? You know, but then again, I still had this, I can't wait to get there attitude sitting on the plane. And so all I literally did, man, was prayed and said, God, please make my parents understand.
Yeah.
After all of the Down East Country Music Association stuff, the Talent America stuff, you know, all the things I did when I was a kid, you know, playing in bar bands since I was 12, you know, to me, it just shouldn't have been such a big surprise to them.
Yeah, yeah.
So I really, and of course, man, I got offered all kinds of things as a kid, you know, there was an agent down in Dallas, Texas from Talent America that offered me to do movie roles and commercials and all kinds of stuff and sign an actual contract with her and do records and tour. And my parents were like, absolutely not. He's going to grow up in Maine and be a normal kid. And I was so mad back then, you know.
So I could understand that.
So finally, when I made the move to Nashville, it took until that literal Grand Ole Opry appearance as an artist, you know, from my dad to finally go, okay, I get it. And to be honest with you, man, I'll share this fun little story with you. When I acquired my first manager, Mr. Mac Wilson, he actually got me involved with the All-Star Guitar Night here in Nashville. And my mom and dad came down for the show. And standing backstage, you know, I had become friends with Noki Edwards and Steve Cropper and, you know, a lot of guys in the guitar world, even early on in my career, thanks to Mac. And so I'm standing there with him, and my dad walks up and says, are you okay, bud? I said, yeah, I'm doing all right. I said, Dad, I want you to meet a good friend of mine. I said, this is Steve Cropper. And Dad just looks at him, shakes his hand, and I said, you know, Dad, sitting in the morning. And Dad's like, hey, you know. Of course, I said, oh, and Dad, this is my other buddy, Noki Edwards from The Ventures, you know, Walk, Don't Run, and, you know, Pipeline. And, man, my dad just was floored because, you know, obviously he played drums in a band in the 60s and played Ventures tunes and stuff. So to meet Noki and Steve, man, he was just floored. So that's when I think things really loosened up with the parents and we could keep on with our relationship. So,
yes.
Very blessed by those opportunities, you know.
Man, that's a really good story. I can tell you from having kids, one thing I learned early on is I really had to ditch expectations.
Yeah.
That was something, and it was tough to do because just like your folks, you know, and I said, I thought about it and I said, well, in reality, it's not my life.
Right.
So I really don't have the right any more than, you know, I got married when I was a young kid and we ended up getting divorced. And when I realized that my ex-wife wasn't going to change, and I have some pair of balls trying to make her change, even though I think, quote, it's the right thing to do, that's not,
right.
You know, that's not my decision. You know, you can't tell somebody to do anything.
Well, and I truly give my parents credit, Craig, because, I mean, obviously they directed me along throughout my entire life.
Sure.
Until that point that I hit 21 and said, bye.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah.
It freaked them out, man, because they had always... But then again, my dad was also the type of guy, man. He raced New England motocross. He was a weightlifter. He was he flew airplanes. I mean, my dad was just the coolest dude, man. But even from the time I was a small child, man, I had my own dirt bikes. I had snowmobiles. I had, you know, he wanted me to. I think really through him, it taught me how to not fear life. Just because I had the visual handicap. He's like, you know, you're going to get on this dirt bike and you're going to ride it. And I was like, I don't know about that. And he'd go, hey, man, just get on it, you know, because once you get going, man, it's not like a bicycle. You don't have to pedal your butt off, man. Just, you know, turn that gas, you know, that gas lever, man, and away you go. And, man, sure enough, I enjoyed riding dirt bikes when I was a kid and snowmobiles in the wintertime. We had enough snow up in Maine, man, choke. So. But he really instilled in me that if I had an opportunity in life to grasp it and just grab it as hard as I can. So you know, even when I would go home from Nashville on vacation, man, he'd say, hey, let's go four-wheeling there. Let's go. You know, we were always doing something fun that was totally off the music-based thing, you know. And so my dad was a really cool guy, and he was certainly a man's man, lifting weights and flying planes and, you know, and he was such a great athlete. And I think that's one thing about my dad that, you know, disappointed him is that I was the chubby kid that played all these instruments and couldn't see to do any of the things that he really hoped I would do. And so really I was thankful to have a great brother and sister who kind of followed in his footsteps in the sports thing and whatnot. But I must say my dad was just a really cool guy to help, you know, push me into having that no fear mentality of just trying something, you know, and, you know, dirt bikes, snowmobiles, and of course, even with my music. So I give my dad and mom a lot of credit, man. I do.
Hey, I'll tell you something. As a dad, my younger son, I got three kids, two boys and a girl. My younger son was born with mild cerebral palsy. So he walks like up on his tippy toes. And as he got older, that became more of a handicap for him. Now he's the jock in the family. So this kid wrestled 4 years of high school, didn't win a match till his senior year, and he won five matches. He ran track 4 years, came in dead last almost every race, completed every one of them, and he swam for 3 years. I only say that, and I'm proud as hell of him. And
yeah,
and he's in a situation now where, like, in his career choices, he thinks that I'm not happy with him, and he doesn't realize how proud I am of him for what he did. So I say that because I would bet you your dad was so proud of you and didn't even give it a second thought about that you what you didn't do, and I would guarantee you that he focused on what you did do.
Well, Craig, I'll share this story too, man. When my dad passed, it was very tragic. I lost my dad and my Uncle Jimmy in a boating accident in 05.
Oh, I'm so sorry,
dad was
man.
57. And,
how old?
57.
Wow, that's so young.
I'll be honest, man, I was supposed to be on the fishing trip with him, and it was actually on Mother's Day. We kids were all going to go home, spend Mother's Day with Mom and hang with Dad, you know, and have some time at home. But I had an opportunity to go to the Tulsa Blues Fest and open for Eric Johnson. So I said, Dad, I've got to go.
Yeah,
I love EJ. I love his playing. I'm like, Dad, I cannot pass this up. Well, all right, Slick, we'll just, you know, reschedule your flight and come home anyway after all that's over. okay. Well, I'm playing the Tulsa Blues Fest, open for EJ. You know, got to meet him, hang with him a bit, you know, and it was just such a monstrous opportunity because, you know, seeing EJ live for me was just amazing. And
an opening for the guy. I mean, that's a little more than just seeing him live, man.
Oh, well, dude, and get this. Here's the funny part. People say, gosh, it must be so hard for you being legally blind to go to concerts and stuff. I said, yeah, but that's the other way that I'm blessed. If I'm even if I'm not on the show, I know the person, so usually I'm standing side stage. Even bigger, you know, and so I, you know, I've been grateful for that as well. But you know, having that hang time with Eric and Eric Sardines was on that show as well. Great slide player and favorite nations guy at the time as well. And, you know, so I was just here I am on stage, man, in front of all these people. You know, there was thousands of people there. And my sister flew down for the show with her boyfriend at the time. And I noticed that Jody was holding her cell phone up so Mom could hear the show while Dad and Uncle Jimmy were fishing.
Wow.
After the show was over, I went to dinner with them, and Mom called and said, I'm really, really worried. There's a massive storm blew up. The rain is blowing completely sideways. Freak storm, you know, which in Maine, we don't usually get huge storms like that unless it's snow, you know.
Sure.
And but I told my mom, I said, look, Dad has always been a very safe hunter and fisherman, and I said, look, if something's happened, Mom, I'm sure he's fine. He's built a lean-to. They're dry. Everything's fine. I said, I'm not worried a bit. And but then again, by 5:30 the next morning, my aunt had called, and they found my dad's body in the lake. And
wow.
He had died of hypothermia. And essentially what happened is they were in a Grand Laker canoe, which is a very famous canoe hand-built up in Maine, up in Grand Lake Stream. And the storm hit, and Dad was—he had a little six-horse Evinrude on the little canoe there, and I guess they matted that thing to get out of the storm. Well, they hit a boon log in the lake, and it punctured a hole in the canoe. Ugh. And when that happened, my Uncle Jimmy went into the drink, man, into the water, and he had hip waders on, so it pushed him down. Well, my dad had this way of swinging the canoe around, man, and like if one of the dogs fell out, he'd reach in and pull him in. But to be honest with you, I guess he tried to do that with Uncle Jimmy, and the storm was so bad and the white caps were so bad it threw Dad in too. And even the doctor said, you know, being a non-smoker all those years and being healthy and a weightlifter, you know, he probably had 8 to 12 minutes to live. And so that was just excruciating to hear because Dad was just such a, you know, kind of a health nut and
sounds like really a larger than life character as well.
He was, and he really was. So to lose him, it just floored me. So I had one of these very massive highs in my career and just ended up facing a really bad low. But I'll be honest, my dad was not a huggable guy. He was not the type of guy to say that he loved you or that he was proud of you. So when I went home for the funeral, what really floored me, man, was all these guys from the mill. My dad was a pipe fitter, a journeyman pipe fitter welder for GP Paper Mill up in Woodland, Maine. All these guys were coming up to me going, man, your dad was so proud of you. He was, man, Thursdays was Johnny Highland Day. You know, your dad, we all sit in the lunchroom waiting for your dad to come in and go, here, guys, read it and weep. Johnny's a guitar player. Or here's a Ricky Skaggs record he played on. Or here's a Toby Keith record. Or they said, yeah, every Thursday was Johnny Day in the mill. So I had no idea, Craig, that he was like that, you know.
Wow.
So buddy, I totally relate to because – I was even more upset losing my dad to realize how proud he was, but had never had a way to say so, you know, and I really knew.
Wow. Yeah, but at least you got to find that connection. That must have meant everything in the world to you, man.
Oh, my gosh, man. And even to this day, I mean, in my book that I'm writing, man, my autobiography, I kind of explained how much of a little Hitler my dad was, man, because – gosh, he just, you know, he had us kids running every single day, weightlifting 4 days a week and you know, practicing, you know, with the band and everything was so, it just had to be so perfect for him. Everything was so, you know, laid out for us kids. Our whole lives were all, you know, predetermined by him, you know. And so when we lost him, man, it was, you know, he was such a hypercritical guy, but he wanted things to be as perfect as possible. And of course, in my playing, I'm still that way today. You know, I still don't like to go out. If I make a mistake on stage, it's like, nope, you know, you're beating yourself up for one wrong.
One little clam.
Yeah, and I'm sorry my screen has gone away.
Oh, well, it's okay. It'll come back, man.
Yeah, I have a call coming in. But anyway, you know, seeing all those guys from the mill, man, come and tell me things of how Dad was proud of me, man, it floored me. I had no idea, because he was just not a vocal guy about stuff like that. So I
wow. Was he? Did he grow up without any parents himself?
Yes, his dad actually died when he was 6 months old.
Okay, so if it means anything to you, some of the psychology that is when you grow up without parents, and you probably know this already, when you grow up without any guidance, you are the guy, you're forced at a young age to take control of many things, and people like that tend to grow up with that sort of, you know, controlling or codependent, very like everything's got to be put in its place.
Yes.
That's
he was definitely that kind of guy, Craig, and on top of that, man, you know, another thing that's really beautiful to share with all our listeners out there is one of the major things that I received from my dad after he died. Obviously, there was no time for a will, and shoot, being at 57, he wasn't even thinking about a will or nothing like that. So in losing him tragically, I was actually gifted my dad's father's 1939 J45 Gibson.
Oh, wow.
Played that guitar since I was a little kid, because Dad never played guitar. And when he was given that guitar when I was like 2.5, 3 years old, that old guitar really stayed with me through all the bluegrass festivals and Down East Country Music Association stuff. And actually, when I was 8, my dad said, "Look, son, I'll buy you a new acoustic guitar, or we can have Grampy's redone," because it was all beat up and had sat in that attic for years. So from the time I was 8 years old, I got to know Dana Bourgeois, man, who builds Bourgeois guitars these days.
Wow.
I got to know him since I was 8, because he redid Grampy's guitar. But I've had that guitar, and I still play it on sessions and still use it quite often. But that was my dad's father's guitar, and I was named after him. His name was John William Hyland, and I'm John Edward Hyland. I took my dad's middle name. So.
Oh, very cool, man.
Yeah, so... So to have that guitar, man, is just priceless, because I remember the day my dad finally said, "All right, you can play it," you know, because it was such a family heirloom to him. It was such a, you know, a value to him, you know, because that was one of the only things of his dad that he owned. So
that's awesome, man.
To have that guitar, man, for sure.
Man, thank you for sharing all of those stories. That was really very touching. One of the things that, like, I wanted to ask you is, you seem to be somebody, and in listening to this, my kind of gut was verified. You have a pretty good ability to keep negative stuff at bay.
I try to. That's not always the easiest thing to do, Craig, as you know. But I try to, man. I try to stay as positive as possible. And I think, you know, being a Christian is really important for me to help me do that. You know, I think there's been a lot of things in this business that have beat me down, man, and I could go into stories for days, but that's here nor there, man. It's just made me grow stronger as a person. And yes, for a while, I did go through a time where I was just completely angry at the business, and, you know, even Don Williams had said, you know, years ago, "I love to perform in front of people, I love to be a musician, an artist, but the business itself is just too hard. It's not fun. There's nothing about it that's fun." And I really agree with him in that. A business is a business, and we all know that. But it's how you choose to keep your attitude in that and to stay strong, you know, which obviously my new album's called Standing Strong. And I think even after all this time and all that I've been through, I find it very, very important to keep positive and stand strong in today's music business. So.
Yeah, that's awesome, man. You wound up doing session work for a lot of artists, top artists. Yep. Mm-hmm. How do you like session work, and how do you feel about it versus touring and running your own band?
You know, man, to me, it's just another one of those things that I get to do, that I'm blessed to be able to do. From my first manager on, man, he really instilled in me, man, there's so many different things you can get into as a guitar player, which, you know, and he was kind of asking me in one of our very first meetings, you know, "Son, you're young. What is it you really want to do?" And I hadn't really thought about it in depth. so to speak, about really let's nail down exactly what Johnny Hyland wants to be. I'm like, man, I want to cover every base that a guitar player can cover.
Sure.
I possibly can. And so he was like, well, you know, you can be a guitar instructor, you can be a session player, you can be a live guy, you can do anything that you want to do. And he's like, there's so many available spots, you know, for different aspects of the guitar. And I said, well, buddy, let's grab every one of them by the horns, man. And that's what we did. So session work was a very big part of that. And, you know, certainly I've been blessed to play on a lot of, you know, a lot of records with big artists. But I think to me at the time, as a youngster growing up, you know, in my early 20s, I was never a partier or anything like that. To me, it was like, let's grab this business by the horns, as I said, and hold on for dear life. You know, it was like riding a bull for me because my career started just booming all at once. And so it was an amazing ride, man, and I still love to do sessions to this day. I think my most fun, though, is going in with my band and creating my music. I think that's really anybody's dream, man, to create music with your name on it that you've written, you know, that's a part of – that comes from a deep inside you. But, you know, to play on records with Toby Keith and Janie Fricke and Len Anderson and Ricky Skaggs, and I mean, my goodness, but what a blessed man I am, you know. And one of the funny parts about sessions for me is I'm – being legally blind, I can't read Nashville number charts very well. I can't see them. And, of course, I've learned how to write them and do what's necessary with them. But so there's been a lot of sessions, man, where I've had to literally just listen to the band and play the song based off my ears, not what I'm seeing in front of me, based on a chart or anything like that. So sometimes it was pretty hard to do, but – then again, it, you know, it was great ear training and of course, to meet all of those artists and be a part of their musical legacy, man, is that's obviously a dream come true as well.
Wow. So the your bar for performance in doing your bar for performance is just had to be higher because of all these other things that were not as accessible.
Yes, you're absolutely right. And I still to this day, man, I guess being 42 and being in this business a long time now, I guess you could say I'm breathing a little easier in the respect that, okay, I'm not 20 years old, I can't stay up for 3 days, you know, and so now I kind of, you know, I have new management now, and we're kind of pre-planning things that I've always had on my bucket list to do, like obviously the Guitar Mania with Johnny Hyland on Renegade. I've always wanted to do a guitar show. Why? Because one thing I've learned over the years is that guitar music has sort of declined. And the reason I say that is when I was a kid, Van Halen was huge with Sammy in it. Van Halen's been Van Halen throughout their entire career. But Van Halen, when Sammy joined for me, it was a turning point for me. And, of course, I became a massive Van Halen nut when Sammy joined. But guitar was really at the forefront of the music business back in the 80s. And now it seems like, you know, it's very hard to keep instrumental music on the radio these days or to have any staying power, so to speak, as a guitar player. So I've just kind of thought of ways to take it upon myself to keep guitar music alive and to keep it right in people's faces, man, because we haven't gone anywhere. We've actually grown massively in this business. There are a lot of amazing, amazing guitar players.
For sure.
And so I, you know, to me, I want to just keep guitar music alive, man, so we can all continue to work and do what we love to do.
That's awesome. Let's talk about some of your endorsements. I'd like to, if you're okay explaining it, you have like loads of endorsements from different guitar makers, you know, so first, congratulations. I mean,
thank you. That's
a pretty good accomplishment, and it certainly speaks to your talent and likability by the fans. But how does that work, like, from a practical standpoint? So, you know, you had a PRS and then you had a Music Man. Like, does one when you have an endorsement, is it like, okay, you can only play X guitar in public for X amount of time, or how does that work?
Well, to be honest with you, man, it's more of a business thing, because people say, well, man, you went from Fender to PRS and then PRS to Music Man. You know, to me, that's a very hard thing, because it was, you know, the business part of it was, you know, probably the main reason that I left and switched companies. with PRS, I found that humbuckers just didn't really work for me. You know, I was playing shows with George Clinton and P-Funk and jumping on stage with G3 or getting on stage with Steve Vai. And so humbuckers at the time were more of what I was trying to go after. And I see you've got a beautiful SG on the wall behind you there.
Yeah, it's got classic 57s. Those things are amazing.
Oh, yeah, buddy. But I, you know, I tried the PRS route for a while and just realized, man, I'm missing that Telecaster spank. And, of course, I knew one of my heroes, Albert Lee, had moved to Music Man. And so going to Music Man, I was able to gain that back, that tone that I wanted. And, of course, now I work with Electric City Pickups to, you know, to have three signature sets of pickups with them. And, of course, a signature wiring harness as well with ECP now. And so, you know, to be honest with you, I never had a Johnny Hyland model with Music Man. I hope, you know, one day that that would happen. But and so what I did to kind of help that along was to have my own pickups made. And, you know, because I think one of the biggest things about having a signature guitar is having your own set of pickups that really help you get your tone.
Sure.
And so, you know, but moving, I think, has really been based more on what's happened in the industry versus, Johnny's a jumper, you know, or he's a, well, I hate to put it in this way, but, you know, a gear whore, so to speak. I'm not that way. In fact, I've been really just trying to find the perfect guitar home where I can stay and be loved as an artist and help the company grow and help, you know, it's kind of a, they scratch my back, I scratch theirs kind of relationship.
But that's what business is. I mean, I think it's, I don't mean to cut you off, but I hate when these people who like, just because, you know, opinions are like assholes, right? Everybody's got one. And right. I mean, it doesn't, I mean, but when you're, you know, as I think Theodore Roosevelt said, when you're the man in the arena.
Yes.
I mean, like any business, like, you know, you use a certain tool for a period of time and then you change for whatever reason. Is it realistic to think that you start your career in Nashville at 20, 22 and you're going to play the same guitar for the next 30 years?
Well, you know, and man, really, I guess ethically, that's what any artist would dream for. Like when you see Vince Gill, you've always seen him with a Tele.
Right.
When you've seen a certain artist, you've seen them with a certain guitar, and they're known for that guitar. And so, to be honest with you, I was hoping for that. But when you have managers and who take care of the, quote, business, working hand-in-hand with a company, man, I'm just the artist,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, yeah.
Playing the guitar and keeping in the public eye. And so there's a lot of factors involved, and I really hope people understand that side of it. It's not all just me trying to jump from company to company. It's never really been that at all. If I had my own way, that never would have happened. I, you know, but to be honest with you, man, I've been gifted a lot of guitars throughout my career, and being a session player, man, I, you know, I've had to accumulate some really killer guitars to do sessions with. And really, I'm sure Mike Durham may have talked about this too, but you need different guitars in your arsenal to be a proper Nashville session guy.
Absolutely.
When a producer asks you for a Telecaster, you better play a Tele. If he asks you for a Gibson Les Paul, you better pull out a Gibson Les Paul. If you know, so I've had to acquire those guitars throughout my career to be the right kind of session player. And of course, a lot of the companies that I work for understand that. And so, you know, I have about 20, 23 guitars, maybe.
That's not even, like, that's probably just an average.
Yeah. I mean, like, Steve Vai's got 300, you know, or what? Steve Miller's got a warehouse on them.
Yeah. Don Felder, I was talking to Don Felder's guitar player, and he was telling me that Don has so many guitars that depending upon where they play, he's got, like, storage lockers in various places around the country, and they just, like, you know, they play in New York City. Okay, they got the New England storage locker. You know, they play in Dallas. Okay, they got the Midwest or the Texas storage. So,
well,
I mean,
I have never been that guy, Craig. I've always been the guy to, you know, I'll just say this. I've never ethically and from a Christian standpoint taken a guitar from any company that I couldn't use or really to help the brand, so to speak.
Sure.
And so, really, yes, I'm Johnny Hyland. When you see me live, I'm with a Music Man guitar because that's what I endorse.
Right.
Excuse me. But in the sessions, I may pull out a Gibson Les Paul. I may pull out a Martin. I may pull out a, you know, I mean, I'm a Godin endorser. So live, you're going to see me hold a Godin guitar. I love them. And, you know, from being an electric guitar player, I had a hard time transitioning into a bigger body guitar live. So really for me, the Godin was an answer to a prayer in that I could switch between my electric and the Godin acoustic easier because of the thinner body. But then again, in the studio world, man, you know, an engineer, all they have to say is, hey, man, that guitar doesn't quite sound right. You got a Martin or you got a Gibson or you have to have those guitars to still be in the right kind of session player that is going to get called back for the next session because you've done things the right way. So really, that's why I have 22, 23 guitars, because a lot of them are what I refer to as session guitars. And then my music mans are my road dogs. So.
And I think the guys that like only play one guitar are much fewer and far further between, you know, honestly. I mean, like, you know, how many guys only, like, you know, there's only so many handfuls of guys like Angus Young, who's played nothing but an SG his whole career. Alvin Lee played, you know, but I mean, even Gilmore for most of his career, he's played a Strat and he's playing a Tele. But he had that Tele. He just, that wasn't his stage guitar. He's always had that Tele, you know?
Right.
I don't know. I'd rather just sit and listen to something. That's almost, I don't know. I got my own opinion about this, so I won't say anything.
I think it's important to share these things, Craig, because I think a lot of people have misconceptions of, oh, you know, Johnny Hyland's a gear whore, or Johnny Hyland's this or that. It's really not based on that, man. It's based on what I need at the time and what I'm doing in my career, you know?
To me, what does it matter? If you want to play whatever you... I mean, I just think it's weird. I mean, play whatever the hell you want to play.
Well,
I don't know. Is that like... maybe I'm just...
Craig... But when I first started my career, as I told you, I moved to Nashville with $98 in my pocket. So to be honest, I didn't have money to go out and buy new guitars. In fact, my first Tele I bought off a friend of mine in Nashville after, you know, my Tele gave out. You know, after playing 3 years straight on Broadway, my first Tele I bought at 16. Finally, the whole bridge just let go. The bolts didn't even hold in the body anymore, you know. And so, you know, I think... what people need to realize is an artist growing his career without a huge pocketbook.
Right.
You need to rely on an endorsement to really help you get off the ground and help you, you know, those companies not only just hand you a guitar or two or 10 or however many you get out of your endorsement, but help build your career. They advertise using your face. They advertise you and what you do and help promote your new records and help promote what you do. There's such an involvement between the company that you endorse and the artist, because the artist is out there supporting their gear as well and trying to keep visible on social media or you know, I do a lot of YouTube videos and stuff, and I think that's really important. So it is one hand washes the other, so to speak, or one, you know, they scratch my back, I scratch theirs. But it has been really crucial for me in my career to have those endorsements. And I'm still very blessed today to be able to, you know, to call upon those people and say, hey, man, I'm really in need of this. And then that leads to a conversation of, yeah, but have you tried our newest pedal, which is this? And so, I mean, man, I've been really blessed in that way. Sure. And I really don't want people to continue with the misconception of how that happens between an artist and a company. I will certainly admit it takes a veritable army to make an artist in this business. And yes, I've been certainly one of the most blessed people on the planet, man, for having the number of endorsers I do. And I could not be the artist I am today without all their help. And I mean that wholeheartedly.
That's awesome, man. I think people should do whatever they want. I don't know. I don't judge anybody for whatever they do. I want to hear Johnny Hyland play music. When I listen to your record, I never think, oh, is he playing this or that? Or, well, that doesn't sound like a Vox wah. It sounds like a Morley. That's ridiculous. I mean, you know, you could take this to absurd levels, you know.
You certainly can, man. And I know there's been people, even on YouTube and stuff, make gestures of me being swapping out time. It's not really about that, man. It's about finding my tone and finding the right gear that's going to allow me to, you know, to express the music I have inside me, man. So I've really been blessed by all those endorsers. And like I said, I couldn't be the artist I am today without them. So I've been real blessed, man.
Man, you go. You do what you want to do. Just keep playing the way you're playing. That's all.
Well, thank you, brother.
Hey, tell me about Guitar Mania. What's that all about, and how's it going so far?
You know, man, Renegade Radio and Redneck Country Radio totally rock. I am so blessed to be a part of, that great radio family. You know, Captain Jack and Joyce, all the folks at Renegade, they have really allowed me to bring forth another, you know, to see another dream come true. And Guitar Mania for me was simply, you know, the name says it all. It's playing guitar, great guitar music. And I mean, it's a complete mixture, man. It's everything from 1950 Speedy West and Jimmy Bryant to Jeff Healey to Steve Vai to Ricky Skaggs to, I mean, it's such a vast array of amazing guitar music. And yes, a lot of times, you know, we'll have shows where I do, hey, Johnny's favorite chicken pickers or the blues greats or, you know, whatever. But there's a lot of times, man, we just mix it up a lot. But really the intent is to keep guitar music alive and in the forefront of people's minds. I think out of sight, out of mind, like anything else in this world. And so to me, it's really trying to bring forth a new energized love for guitar music. And so I'm real thrilled to have that opportunity.
Okay, so for people who don't know what it is, this is a radio show. Where can people find this?
Yes, RenegadeRadioNashville.com. Every Monday night at 8 p.m. Central Standard Time, come listen to some great guitar music, man, and a lot of fun, a lot of stories, gear talk, all kinds of fun stuff. So,
and how long is the show on for?
We're an hour show.
And is it any talking or stuff? Or it's all playing, or is it banter? Oh,
there's talking, man. My manager, John Herring, actually does the show with me. He's my co-host, and we tell great stories, man, and we talk about different people. And yeah, I even sometimes grab a guitar and get inspired by a track and have to play a lick or two. So it's really fun, man. I'm so enjoying it.
Do you know Greg Martin from the Kentucky Headhunters?
Oh, I love Greg, man.
Yeah, he's amazing, isn't he? He's an incredible human being. He does the Lowdown Hoedown.
Oh, yes. I've done that a few
times. Yeah, he does that show. He's a really cool guy.
He is. And, you know, the funny story about Greg Martin, man, is he was the reason I got my first Les Paul.
Yeah, I'm sure, because that guy plays that freaking Les Paul.
Well, see, my dad was a big, avid lover of old Southern rock, you know, the Outlaws, Blackfoot, you know, all that old, you know, Southern rock stuff. But when the Headhunters came out, we were lifting weights in the woodshed one day, man, and Walk Softly on This Heart of Mine came on the radio, and Dad said, "Who is that band?" And he literally ran to Callis, Maine, where there was a little store called Record Town, downtown Callis, and he went and bought me that record. Picking on Nashville, that the Headhunters first released. It was their first album.
With Dumas Walker was on that, I think.
He slapped the cassette on the table and said, "Son, if you learn all these solos, I'll buy you a Les Paul."
Wow.
Dude, I learned the entire record, all of Greg's notes and matched his tone and all that. And Dad, sure enough, took me to Northern Kingdom Music in Bangor and bought me my first Les Paul. So.
That's awesome. Good story. Yeah, I interviewed Greg. And in fact, it just came out recently, this week, I think. What a guy. Sweetest guy ever, man. Like, you know, I want to give him a hug.
Yeah, he is such a hero to me, man. And because of that story that I shared, man, I was a telly nut from Ricky Skaggs, you know, throughout my childhood, man. And so when Greg started rocking the Les Paul, man, it was like, oh, and Dad goes, "Well, you need one of those." He goes, "But I'm not going to get you one until you learn all his solos off this record." So
very cool.
It was amazing, man. So I still thank Greg about that, you know, to this day, man. He's such a great guy and a great friend.
All he does is plug in. He has a Marshall Plex, no tone pedals, no distortion. It's 58 Les Paul Marshall Plexi. Boom. That's it.
What a time, man. Good gracious.
I know. They're coming down here like in January, so I'm looking forward to seeing them.
Right on, man. You know, actually, Craig, we did a Johnny and Friends show here in Nashville, which actually was in support of the Inspire America Foundation that I work with. And, of course, you mentioned that at the top of the show. We help underprivileged children and veterans, the homeless, and the trafficking issues of today. And
That's an important issue, the trafficking stuff.
It really is. And, man, you know, in doing that show, man, I called the Headhunter boys. I called Greg and said, "Man, I'd love you guys to come down." And so he and Richard actually came down, man, and played that show, and it was just a blast, man.
That's so cool.
So folks can go on YouTube, actually. There's a video of me sitting in with the Headhunters, man, and they've just been great guys to me in this career, man, and definitely heroes to me for sure.
Yeah, they're both very cool. Very cool guys. Hey, so, okay, Guitar Mania, RedneckCountryRadio.com, and RenegadeRadioNashville.com, 8 p.m. Monday nights. Awesome. So you're like one of the fastest and cleanest players around, right? And well, okay. You might be one of the fastest and cleanest players around. Most people, I mean, there's a lot of people listening to this that are obviously guitar players. So what would be the top three things, you know, outside of practice, what would be the top three things you would advise people to do if they're looking to play to improve their speed?
To improve their speed.
And play clean. How do you be Johnny Hyland? That's the question. With besides practice, which I'm sure is 90% of it. But is there any, you know?
Man, I don't know if I can name you three things, but one of the most important things that I'll share is, number one, you have to find the right pick. I know over the years, man, I've swapped from a Fender medium style pick, then I tried Dava picks, which I loved. I played them for years, and now I'm with Vinnie Smith and V picks, man, and the Johnny Hyland pick is pretty thick. It's like 2.75, man. It's
wow, that's like the size of a quarter.
Yeah, it really is. But it's made out of acrylic, and it's just awesome. And but the other thing I'll share is when you find the right pick, it will inspire you to continue to practice. And then the thing is, if you start to practice your picking, you know, make sure that you use the right technique. And of course, in my True Fire videos, I talk about about that. But the thing is, the main thing to any guitar player that I would give as advice is, yes, there are going to be days you become frustrated with your own playing. Don't allow that to make you stop playing. Put it down for an hour or two and go right back to it. Because, you know, it's like when you're a kid and you're learning to ride a bicycle and you're wobbling. And then all of a sudden, wham, you fall down and you skin your knee all up. You know, I hate that thing. No, you don't hate it. You go, you wait a half an hour, you go in and clean your knee up, put some ointment on it or whatever. Sure, some salve on it, as they say down here in the South. but then you go right back out there and you get on that bike again. And you keep doing it. And after a while, it becomes smoother and smoother and smoother. And guitar playing is the same way. To me, guitar is so much fun as long as you allow it to stay fun. Because, you know, guys, if guitar playing was easy, everybody would do it.
Oh, yeah.
But then again, if you stay true to it, then it's going to be your best friend, man. It's only going to say what you make it say. So the fact is, don't ever give up on your passion. If you feel that you're having a hard time practicing, just don't stop. Don't allow it to get you so frustrated that you put it down and put it down for good.
That's really good advice. So the pick, and then just be patient with yourself. Allow yourself.
Yes.
So we all, you know, you talked about paying tuition in the music business and in general, and I was wondering if over the course of your career, there might have been one or two mistakes you made that you're willing to share, and what lessons you learned from those mistakes.
Buddy, if we had about 10 hours, I could. Let me just put it this way, my friend. We're all going to have issues in our lives.
Yeah.
We all do. But in the music business, one of the things that I've had a problem with is, number one, my trust in how do I put this into words without being too poignant? When you hire a manager and you put all of your trust in them, if they do not understand your dream in its entirety, then it's so hard for you to stay true to yourself. So I'll say this. Most of my downfalls have been with, I've swapped management, two or three times in my career. And I'm to the understanding by other artists that that's not, uncommon.
Right.
But at the same time, you are going to be your best promoter. You are going to be your best billboard, because deep down inside what your heart is passionate about. And you know, to me, what really is mind-blowing in this business is great management gets you a lot of work, and you're kind of like the roadrunner, you know, meep, meep, and you're, you know, just running at everything you can do, sessions and teaching and performing live and doing this, that, and the other, and you constantly feel like you're running a race. But what happens is you start to become a workaholic, and you're becoming a workaholic but losing the passion based on how much work you're truly doing, that sometimes you don't really find any passion in at all. You're doing it because your manager says, this is something great, you need to do it. But if you're not really feeling the passion behind it over time, you start to feel like, wow, man, am I losing everything that I've worked so hard to achieve? Am I losing the, you know, losing the passion just based on the business? So I think that's one of the biggest things that I've had to learn is I need to stay true to Johnny Hyland and allow management to work with me in the realm of me saying, hey, I still need to steer the ship, so to speak. If I let someone else steer my ship, then I go in all kinds of different directions. So I think the biggest thing to, you know, that I could share for advice of any artist out there, always stay true to your passions and your dreams and your goals. And set goals for yourself and achieve them one at a time. Don't put 10 of them on your plate and expect to, you know, to achieve them all.
Yeah, for sure.
I think that's really one of the biggest mistakes I've made in this business, man. And then, of course, as that starts to happen and you get so crazy busy, then you start kind of wondering, well, you know, do I put all my trust in that person? And then problems can occur, and then you're finding yourself looking for new management or whatever. You know, I'm really blessed to be working with Crush Worldwide right now and John Herring, and, you know, we're having a good time. I'm actually 42 years old and having a good time in the business. But yet some people would say, well, you're not doing this, though, and you're not doing that, not doing this. Well, you know, I think a lot of answers come from the fact that, you know, yes, it's very hard when you take a break from the business and you just play honky-tonks and have fun playing guitar. When you're trying to get back into the scene, it's really hard to, you know, to build that momentum back. So that's what we've been doing. And, you know, 2018 is going to rock, buddy. I'm just really excited about it. And you know, but then again, you really have to understand this business, man. Sometimes you get built up about something that's going to happen and then crash. It doesn't happen at all.
Yeah, I've heard that time and time again. And that's it. And again, it's like that's any business.
But you hold your chin up, man, and you keep going, man. Yeah. You just keep true to yourself and stand strong through the whole thing.
I have this thing on my wall here. It says there's only three reasons you will not be successful. One, you don't try new things. Two, you don't learn from what you try. Or three, you give up. And I put that there because, shit, I have my own share of bad days, you know, and I always I turn around and look at that all day long, and I'm like, okay, just put my head down and keep doing, you know, learn from the mistakes, whatever, and just keep going. And if it didn't work, just, okay, got another at-bat coming, you know.
So. Well, and I think you're right, too, Craig, about what you said, too, man, about trying new things. I must admit, dude, I'm a very old-school guy. I still love putting a physical CD in my hand. I'm not happy about some of the new-age things in our music industry, you know, streaming and downloads and all this and that.
Yeah,
I'm still now just catching up to technology when it comes to smartphones and tablets and all this stuff. Mm. But, you know, and really being more active on social media, those kind of things. You know, our industry keeps changing and it keeps evolving. Mm. And so, yes, you have to try new things and evolve with it.
You really do. Because it's if not, it becomes a vetting process that because of lack of participation, you're automatically excluded from.
That's right.
You know, now if you participate, it doesn't work and you get excluded. Well, fair enough. You gave it a shot. But if you just surrender, man, that's
That's the point, man. I'm the guy that is, you know, never surrender, buddy. Yeah. That's the thing. I just keep hard. And but then again, man, I've, you know, my beautiful wife Kimmy, man, we've been married since 05, and man, I mean, she is my support staff, buddy. I'll tell you, when I get frustrated or I get down, that girl knows how to pick me back up, man. And
yeah.
So I've been really blessed, and I think it really takes, like I said earlier, it takes a veritable army to make a great artist in this business. But even more than that, it takes a great, you know, person that is your soulmate that you can connect to. I found that that's very important, and I know people in the music industry. Oh, I've been divorced 3 or 4 times. And well, you know, maybe because, you know, there's reasons behind that too. But I know I've been so blessed to have Kimmy, man. And really don't know what I'd do without her now, man. She's just a total blessing to my life. And I love her dearly.
Well, congratulations. 12 years is good going, man.
Yeah, buddy. We're pushing 13. And I'm just, you know, here again, it's that person that makes you realize what you're doing wrong. If you get frustrated, they can help you go, what are you frustrated for and why?
Well, and you don't have to worry about trust there. You got someone on your team. That's the good thing about that, man, because, you know, you may not want to hear the answer.
But,
you know, it's genuine.
It is genuine. And that's, man, since I've married Kimmy, buddy, I've realized that just how important that truly is. So I just tell people I have the best wife in the music business, and I still believe that to this day.
That's awesome, man. Congratulations again.
Thank you.
Hey, let's talk gear for a couple of minutes. What's your is your Music Man your go-to guitar right now?
Absolutely, man. I have a 1998 Music Man Axis Sport, which is a Telecaster-styled guitar based off the old Eddie Van Halen model, and it's just totally kick butt, swamp ash with 3 single coils, 5-way switch, volume and tone knob, 22 frets, 4-2 headstock like all great Music Mans, and man, just super, super cool tone, man.
What other two guitars, you know, 2 or 3 guitars would, let's say, round out your top?
Well, actually, the Axis Sport, I've got 2 of those, and then I've got 6 Silhouettes that I just truly love, and they're all set up differently, you know, some with humbuckers, some with 2 humbuckers and a single coil, and some with 3 single coils. That obviously I use as session guitars as well, just as much as live guitars.
Hmm.
But, you know, I love Charles Whitfield Telecasters. Charles,
you know what? Greg told me about him. He said those are awesome.
They are killer, man. They really are. And Charles is a great friend, man. And, you know, I've been blessed to get turned on. And I'll say this, man. A vintage Fender Tele today is hugely expensive.
Oh yeah.
You go out to buy a 53 Telecaster, you better have a fat wallet, right?
Mm.
So for guys like me who love those older feeling tellies, to me, I think Charles Whitfield has the best Telecaster relic in the business today that is actually affordable.
Yeah.
You can get. So I just truly love those guitars, and so I have 2 of his guitars. One that's a stock Tele, Blackguard kind of guitar, and then I have one that's got P90s in it.
Oh, wow.
That I use for slide, man, and it's really cool. But, man, all of my guitars, I guess my 4th guitar would be a Bill Cummins Jazz Box. I have Bill is actually based in Philadelphia, Pennsylvania, and he built me an old-school style jazz box, man. You know, 2-inch body, just truly amazing, man, and 1 pickup in the neck. And, of course, it's funny. People are like, you didn't have a bridge pickup put in, dude? You know, you're a bridge guy. Well, I really am. But when I get out that guitar, man, it's totally Western swing, man, all the way. So, but a true master of, you know, guitar building. I love Bill Cummins, man, and I'm really, really blessed to own that guitar. So,
do you still have that original Les Paul that you got for learning?
That was an old Les Paul studio, and I got rid of that when I was in college, actually, man. But I upgraded to a Standard at that point.
Cool, cool.
Now, 42, I've got an R7, 57 historic reissue, and it's decked out with Electric City Pickups Revival Set, which is based off his RD-59s. And actually, it's got a Martin 6-string Customs Holy Grail harness in it with original 50 Sprig Bumblebees.
Oh, wow.
And, buddy, that car is hotter than a firecracker.
Yeah, you got the whole 9 yards there, man.
It's awesome, man. But then again, in getting back to guitars, I really have to take my hat off to Godin Guitars, man. I love their A6, and I love their multi-act nylon slim. And, of course, I've got an Acousticaster that I love, too, man. Those are, you know, outside of my old Martin and the old Gibson, I mean, man, those Godin guitars are just phenomenal for playing live or even in the studio, man. They're just phenomenal guitars.
Very cool, man. If I ask you to pick your 3 favorite albums, what's the first 3 that come to mind?
My first favorite record would be Danny Gatton with Joey DeFrancesco in Relentless.
Yep.
The Relentless album. I love that. My second favorite record, and I know this one is kind of people would say, oh, come on, man, you know. But there's a Ricky Skaggs record that has been released called Country Gentleman, which is all of Ricky's greatest hits. There's two discs just full of amazing music. So that would be my number two as far – my number one in country, but my number two favorite of all time records. My third would be – oh, gosh, that's a toughie. Ooh. Gosh, man, I don't know. I would have to say – ooh. Dude, I love all my records. I don't know.
Do you listen to actual LPs still, or do you listen, or do you at least like, do you listen to digital, or what do you listen to?
I'm a CD nut.
Okay,
man.
Okay.
Just as much as a CDs.
Yeah.
Gosh, man, it's hard to put a number three down because I have so many records that I love. You know, like Joe Satriani, The Extremists, Steve Vai, Passion and Warfare, Van Halen for Unlawful Carnal Knowledge. Man, there's just so many records. To go genre based, you know, Stevie Ray Vaughan, In Step.
Yeah.
I have so many of my favorite records, man. It's crazy.
If you had such a nice and really, you had a very fulfilling childhood, it seems. Is there like a best childhood memory?
The best childhood memory for me, man, was winning Talent America, really, because we had worked so hard playing bluegrass festivals and building our name. And, you know, of course we were, you know, a child novelty act, so to speak. But then again, I took my playing very seriously. And the three J's, man, were my brother and sister and I. And my brother was like the comedian. My sister helped me sing harmonies. And, of course, I played guitar, banjo, mandolin, and fiddle in that band. But then we had Phil Gallup on guitar, who taught me my first seven chords. So, obviously, we had a amazing relationship, and we had
there's more than seven?
Oh, well, yeah. I've heard there's over 1,600 chords, but I know about 20 now instead of seven. but actually, and then we had Nancy Merrill on upright bass, and we had Jerry Morrill on fiddle. So we had a fun little bluegrass band, man. But when we actually won the Talent America Showcase, man, in New York City, it was like, yes, we did it. You know, I mean, it was like we were going up against models and dancers and, you know, kids from all over the country that did different things, man. And, you know, we little straw cowboy hat wearing, you know, we had these straw cowboy hats with partridge feathers, man. Like, my dad would take my brother and I hunting, and if we shot a partridge, the feathers would go on the front, you know, after we ate him, you know. But
Where was that? Do you know where in New York? Was that like at the Felt Forum probably or something like that?
It was at the World Trade Center, man.
Oh, wow. I didn't know they had an arena there.
Yes, they had a big ballroom thing in the bottom, and it was, oh man, that was just such an amazing time. And the first Talent America that we attended was the Roosevelt Hotel.
I know exactly where that is.
Where we won the first part of it, and then the second part we went back and got to play as winners at the World Trade Center.
I used to work in Tower 2.
Oh, did you really?
Yeah, when I was a kid, they don't even have this anymore. I was a messenger during the summer where you'd pick up a package in one place and deliver it to another place.
Oh, wow.
If you weren't doing what you're doing now, what do you think you'd be doing instead? Which is probably a very tough question. Would you be a history teacher?
No, actually, man, I can honestly tell you what I would be doing. I would be either running or working for a watch company.
Really?
I love timepieces, man. I collect watches, and I just love time. I love, you know, playing so many instruments, man. I'm always metered.
Yes.
You know, to practice to a metronome. But I just love time, and so I have a massive watch collection. You know, with Renatos and Victas, you know, Breitlings. You know, I just love watches. And I would probably say I have more Invictas than any other brand. But gosh, man, today I'm wearing a Columbia Digital that I work out in. So, and I'll be honest, man, this last year people said, oh my goodness, man, you haven't been on the road much. No, we've been building the momentum, getting me back out in the public eye. And man, I have actually dropped about 125 pounds in the last year.
Holy shit. Congratulations, yeah, man. You must feel like $1 million.
You know, dude, I do, but I'm always sore because I'm working out like a madman.
Well, the pain of being sore is a lot less than the long-term pain of having an extra 120 pounds on you. Holy crap. Congratulations. Wow.
Man,
Good for you.
Most people that know me in this business know I've always, man, I've been a big guy since I was a little kid. I was like 215 pounds in junior high school. You know, I've just always been a big kid.
Wow, that's amazing. 120 pounds.
Actually, my dog is trying to make an appearance here.
That's all right, man. We're a dog-friendly show.
Oh, yes, man. I'm glad to hear that, buddy. I've really focused on my health in the last year.
That's fantastic. And
you know, I think really what happens is your career gets so busy that you really forget about the important things. And, you know, people could say, yeah, Johnny, you know, you've had a lot of people dog you on YouTube and different things about being heavy and whatever. But I've always had, you know, some amazing support out there from fans, man, who get it, who understand it, you know. But in this last year, man, I've really tried to do my best to drop some weight. And
didn't think
I would go this far. And to me, if I lose another about 48 pounds or so, I'll be back to about 200 pounds. And that's really where I want to be. So.
Good for you, man. Congratulations. That's a lot of weight. That is amazing.
Yeah.
Man, that's as much of an accomplishment as your guitar playing. I mean, seriously, it really is.
I appreciate that. And I keep striving to become a better guy all the time. And to be honest with you, man, for all you folks out there that struggle like I do with that, man, dancing. Is the best thing.
That's what you've been doing, dancing.
My wife got me an LG Tones headset, man, and I put iHeartRadio or Pandora on, and I go down there and literally, you know, you can call it dancing, you can call it like a Taibo thing where you're punching, kicking, moving, but you're jumping for 45 minutes straight, 30 to 45 minutes. And, man, you come out of there just like someone just dumped you with buckets of water. I mean, it's just crazy the amount of weight you can lose by doing that, so.
That's awesome, man. Good for you. I know, because I'm naturally heavy. I was really heavy as a kid, so my metabolism is. I'm so super disciplined because if I'm not, you know, like I wore Husky pants when I was a kid. You know, I don't know if they even have that anymore. But yeah, that was a nightmare being chubby and fat as a kid.
You know, last summer, man, I was doing some gigs with my buddy Tim McDonald, and goodness gracious, man, our washing machine broke. It died. And so I had to play this gig, and I asked my wife, I said, sweetie, can you run me to – I need to go to Walmart or somewhere to find a shirt for this gig tonight. And I literally – we ran to Walmart, man, and I remember the day. I ran in there, and I found a 3X shirt, which, dude, I haven't fit into a – I was wearing 4 and 5Xs easily, you know, at my highest weight. And so I just grabbed one, and I thought, this is not going to fit me, man. But I put it on over the shirt that I had on. And I was like, yes!
Yeah, that's a good feeling, man.
I dogged one of them, man. And so, to be honest with you, that's really what made me realize that, hey, this is working and I need to step it up. And so now it's, you know, this is one of them I got on, man. Good old USA t-shirt, man. But I just, you know, I had always had to spend so much money as a big guy ordering my clothes online and having to either have them tailored or hemmed or whatever. And, you know, you'd spend $70 to $100 for a shirt, you know,
sure.
$50 a t-shirt. So when I could go into Walmart and buy a t-shirt, buddy, for, you know, $5, I was like, yes!
There you go. You got a raise.
Man, so it really inspired me to keep going with this thing, man. And I never thought I'd reach this point, but I want to keep going.
Yeah, man, keep going for sure, man. The healthier you get, the smarter you get, you know?
Well, and hey, it makes you pick faster too, man.
Absolutely, man. Hey, what's your superpower, your non-musical superpower?
Ooh. Non-musical superpower. Mm-hmm. Kimmy?
You can hear batteries go dead.
Kimmy said you can hear batteries go dead. You know, honestly, man, I am one of the things that with the eye problem, I have really sensitive hearing. It's funny, man. I could hear a mouse fart at 50 paces, dude. You know, it's crazy.
No, you know what? I have no sense of smell.
And
my hearing is much amplified. So I totally get it. The only problem is, man, I have such a big nose. I don't feel it's equitable. Like, I should have, like, a small nose with no sense of smell. It's like a lot of real estate wasted on me.
That is, oh, dude. That, but yeah, to be honest, man, Kimmy said you're the best husband in the world.
There you go. Best sweetheart. Husband in the world. You know what's funny? A lot of times I'll ask a question, who's the most important person in your life? And I'm not going to ask that to you because you already told us that. And
Kimmy.
I know that, but you know it's really weird. I can't tell you how many times I'm interviewing a guitar player or an artist in the room, and it's been quiet as a church mouse in there. Quiet as a church, right? And all of a sudden, at the exact time I asked that question, the wife happens to come walking through. It's like the weirdest thing, and I'm looking at it, and I'm saying, man, you better only give me one answer right now. You know?
Oh, that's so funny.
You have any hobbies or interests outside of music, Johnny?
Yes, I actually love to draw. I've actually written a children's book called Tough and Friends, man. That's all, you know, all the pictures were drawn by me, but I'm a cartoonist, dude. I love to draw.
Really? That's awesome.
And of course, these days, man, in the last probably 10 years or so, I've been really in depth studying the Bible. So really, for me, those are probably my two biggest hobbies outside of...
You forget, man, fitness. Now,
fitness, and then, of course, my favorite pastime outside of reading God's Word is going fishing. I love to fish.
Bass fishing?
Any kind of fishing, buddy. Man, it could be brook fishing, trout fishing, bass fishing... In a boat. I love it all. I really do.
Do you live in Nashville or where do you live?
I live about 15 minutes from downtown Nashville, yeah.
But there's no lakes around there, is there?
Well, you got Percy Priest Lake and then there's Old Hickory Lake.
So you got some stuff. You got some local places to go.
I've got a few here, but I mostly, man, I must admit, being a blind guy, I have to give credit to Kimmy's dad, Larry Hart. He's my fishing buddy. Most of the time, man, I go fishing in Virginia. Kimmy has we have an Aunt Joanne who has a farm up in Chatham, Virginia. And we go to her hand fed pond and Dad and I just cut it up, man. We just play guitars, you know, and do a bunch of fishing. So that's really where I love to go the most.
That's nice and relaxing, man.
It truly is, man.
You've been all over the world. What's your favorite place you've been to?
Ireland.
Man, I hear that a lot.
I love Ireland, and I love Italy. I love all the – man, I love every place that I go. But if I had a chance to move somewhere, I would move to Italy. Or, I'm sorry, Ireland.
To Ireland. I hear Ireland a lot as an answer. What, just the rural, out the green, or what is it in particular, the people? Well,
I have a little touch of the Irish in me there.
There you do.
But to be honest with you, but yeah, it is the most breathtakingly beautiful place.
Mm.
Even for a blind guy, man, there's green for miles around. I love the people, man. I truly love Irish people, and they love good old country music, traditional country music, man. So my hat's off to those folks. But man, being all around the world, buddy, yeah, I love Italy, I love Ireland, I love Japan, I love my fans everywhere, man. I mean, people all across this world, man. Let's just keep guitar music alive, and I thank y'all for, you know, being so supportive of me all these years.
Johnny, I got three questions left for you, then I'm going to cut you loose. I really appreciate all your time, man. What's the toughest decision you ever had to make or the hardest thing you ever had to do?
Wow. I think I'm going to have to pass on that, buddy. I don't know.
No worries. What about leaving, going to Nashville? That was probably one of them, no? That was pretty tough.
If I had to nail it down, yeah, I think you'd be right about that. Leaving home and leaving the, you know, the comforts of having family all around.
Sure.
That was the hardest decision, was leaving home to come here. But yet my heart was so set on Nashville, but I was laser focused, man. So, but yes, having the parents angry and missing family back home, yeah, that made that decision very hard.
Are your sister and brother still up in Maine, or are they down closer to you?
Actually, no. My sister is now a radiologist in just outside of Hartford, Connecticut, and my brother now lives in Connecticut as well. And so, yeah, they're in the Connecticut area, man. I don't get to see them as much as I'd like, but then again, that's partially my problem. But I need to go home and visit, man.
You can go play Toad's Place. You know that place in Connecticut? You ever played there?
Oh, I've never been there.
Yeah, there's a pretty famous place. It's called Toad's Place. I'm trying to think where it is now. It's not in Newport. It's in anyway, it's pretty famous. Everybody, like Springsteen play there, the Stones play there, U2. It's like everybody has played there at a certain point in time. Toad's Place. Wow. Yeah. Most important lesson this entire journey, this musical journey you've been on, has taught you about yourself.
The biggest thing that my entire journey has taught me is to stay true to myself, really, and to persevere in this business, to not get down about things, to love everybody, to be true to myself, and just be the kindest person, you know, as a Christian that I can be. Stay true to God, love my wife, be true to her, be true to my family and friends. And the guitar music and the things I do in this business, man, you know, when everything in your personal life is blessed, then your career will be blessed too, because you're so much more happy of a man. So I would have to say that I don't allow the business to overtake me. I'm still Johnny Hyland, the man first, the Christian first, and then my career happens. And so I think what this journey has taught me is how to prioritize my life the right way. And what is most important to me is my study of God and loving Him and, you know, being the best husband I can be to Kimmy, and then allowing my career to flourish around those two major things, man.
Fantastic. Thank you. Last question. What's your definition of happiness for today? Because that's a changing, it's a moving target at times.
Having the ability to do what you love to do. I think in this day and age, man, where we have so many distractions and so many things thrown at us all the time. I mean, I've got to the point where I don't even like to watch the news, man, because it bothers me. But you get to a place, though, where, you wake up in the morning and you set your schedule for that day. And you say, man, tomorrow's not promised to any of us. So I want to make today the most happy day that I can. How am I going to do that? By doing the things that makes me feel like I'm worth something and I'm worthy of people's attention or my wife's attention or God's attention. But to me, happiness really is based on the time that you have allotted to yourself, which I think is really hard for a lot of people because jobs get in the way, just things around our lives get in the way of allowing ourselves to really just focus on ourselves and loving the people around us. But I think that's what brings true happiness. Doing what you love to do and being true to the people around you.
Well, man, I can't thank you enough. I want to tell people how we could find you on the radio. And then if you got it, where can they find you and send you money and participate in what Johnny Hyland has to offer online? Online, check Johnny out on the radio.
The best place is johnnyhyland.net.
Great. Just go to johnnyhyland.net, H-I-L-A-N-D. And anything specific you want to promote or anything going on? I know you're working on a new record.
Well, the new record out. It's called Standing Strong, and it's available on my website, johnnyhyland.net. But of course, you can find it where all music is sold. You know, CD Baby, Amazon. I'm sure it's everywhere. Spotify, YouTube. You can find it anywhere now. But yeah, the new record's out. We're real proud of that. Of course, the Guitar Mania with Johnny Hyland on Renegade Radio and Redneck Country Radio. Please tune in every Monday night at 8 p.m. Central Standard Time. All you need to do is go to RenegadeRadioNashville.com and tune in. And that show is a blast. Of course, we're getting ready to gear up for in November. I'm going down to shoot a few more True Fire courses, so I'm real excited about that. But yeah, so we're getting ready to do a few more True Fire courses, which I'm so proud to be a part of the True Fire family, man. They're great people. Mm. And, you know, so we're getting ready for that. And of course, we got the Steel Guitar Cruise coming up. I want everybody to know about that. Go on to thesteelguitarcruise.com, or you can find them on Facebook. Book your reservations now, because it's going to be a rip-roaring good time with some great picking, I assure you that. So just a lot of wonderful things in the works, man. You know, we've got some touring coming up next year. But here again, anything you want to know about me, the gear I use, you know, you can go to the news page where there's all kinds of new stuff reported all the time. Anything you want to know about me, you can find on johnnyhyland.net. And just know, you know, that I thank everybody who's out there listening I thank you all for all the continued support. And, you know, thank you all for keeping guitar music alive. Thank you for, you know, being so supportive, man. We could not do what we do in this music business without our fans, man, truly. And so, yeah, go out and buy the new record, and hopefully it'll give you a good earful. And if not, tune in to Renegade. You'll hear me every Monday night. And just know that I love you, and I thank you so much.
Everybody, listen, thank you so much for listening. I hope you enjoyed this interview as much as I did. Thank you again, Johnny, so much. You're really transparent, really candid, man, really genuine guy. And, you know, I wish you nothing but, you know, like amazing, wonderful things for you and your wife over there sitting next to you, putting up with you for all these years. That's like 13 years. That's like 91 years, dog years, man.
How she's put up with it. And rehearsals here, and you know, I've got Island Studio downstairs. Man, she's put up with a lot. From I don't know how she deals with me, buddy, but she said, "Oh, I'm so terrible."
You heard it here first. All right, everybody, thanks for listening. Thanks, Johnny. Go to everyonelovesguitar.com and sign up to get notified about future episodes we'll be having, along with some cool stuff for guitar players. Now, be nice, go play your guitar, and have fun. Till next time, I'm out. Peace, y'all. We hope you enjoyed this show. If you did, subscribe to the Everyone Loves Guitar podcast, and you can do this online at everyonelovesguitar.com or on iTunes. And if you like the show, please leave us a 5-star positive review. The more 5-star reviews we get, the higher our show ranks, and higher rankings mean we get to continue speaking with cool, interesting guests on our show. We'll see you on the next episode, and until then, keep playing your guitar and have fun making music.